Hey there, if you enjoy this podcast, perhaps you'd like to sign up for my Core Texts in Philosophy class, delivered entirely online starting in mid-January. For more information, please go right now to partiallyexaminedlife.com/class. Hey, this is Pretty Much Pop, a culture podcast, ho-ho-hoing all the way down your chimney.
Wow, that's great.
You just thought that of that on great. The fly? Wow.
That's professional podcasting right there, man.
Showing us how it's done.
My man is good. That was really good.
It's our annual holiday episode, and today we're discussing Santa. He deserves to be taken down. We're taking him down. The mythological figure, the character.
I'm not taking down Santa. I'm not messing with that guy.
He appears in many things. He plays a unique role. Maybe that not the unique, but some kind of role in our pop culture. And we have a weird relationship with it, given that we were children at some point. So, yeah, what can we make of that? That was pretty much the prep. There was no specific movies that we had to watch. We're coming to this with our preconceptions, our denominations.
I would like to introduce myself, if that's okay.
Same here.
Oh, yeah, all right. We can introduce ourselves.
They don't know who we are.
Just in case nobody knows who we are.
I'm Mark Linsenmeyer, ho-ho-hoing down your chin. No. I'm Mark Linsenmeyer.
It is the end of the year. It is so crazy in the streets. Okay, sorry.
Can you tell? I'm Al Baker, writing a list, but getting ChatGPT to check it twice.
Ooh, good one.
My name is Sarah Lynn Breck, and I still believe that Batman smells and Robin laid an egg.
My name is Lawrence Ware, and I do not trust elves on shelves.
Did you do that? Did anybody do that?
I detest it.
I never did it as a child, but my girlfriend is a big part of her family history. So since I've been in this relationship, I've had elves on shelves, and it's not something you want to adopt later in life. There's no charm in it from an adult perspective.
No, it sounds like an obligation.
I'm legitimately thinking about writing about elves on shelves and the police state and like teaching kids. I do not like it. I hate elves on shelves. Hate it.
Well, this is basically like, you know, one of the saints, the Virgin Mary, some sort of addition to the Santa Claus mythos, because it's basically the same thing that Santa observes, makes moral judgments about you. I mean, how do we feel about that? Just as an overall thing, as a tool of parental control of children. Is this ethical?
I feel great about it, honestly. No, I don't feel great about it. It's fine. We weren't threatened as kids with rocks in our shoes or anything like that. It was purely joyous, I think, from growing up. And now that I'm a parent of a 20-year-old, we didn't do too much with Santa, mostly because we're in a mixed marriage. So my husband's Jewish, I'm not. And he was like, anytime Virginia came up with, you know, what's the deal with Santa? He would be like, that is your mom's department. I want nothing to do with this.
Wow.
So we kind of played it down a little bit in our house, but it was still fun.
Wowzers.
So Santa did not enable you to reach across the denominational divide, that the fact that there's a secular Christmas. My sister is also married to a Jewish man. They have done Christmas in their house, but they just wouldn't even have known what the religious significance of it was. For it's just a purely a secular cultural thing. And unless you're super Jewish, or I don't know, I don't want to speak for Jewish folks everywhere, but I don't see the problem as a non-Jew with having a tree in your house.
No.
It's not like you have a big cross.
No, we do. And we do everything. So we do Hanukkah and we do Christmas, but it's all secular. So none of it is religious in our house. It's all just for fun.
Al, I'm going to let you go because I have a long, torrid history here. So you go for it, man.
Santa was a huge part of my childhood and was the main part of Christmas. And interestingly, my family was very secular. My granddad was Jewish. I mean, a secular Jew. But he was, in my memory, the biggest Christmas enthusiast among the family. I think particularly Santa. He was the one who always dressed as Santa every Christmas. We did that whole rigmarole every Christmas day when me and my sister and my cousins were children. My granddad would disappear for a while and no one would care because Santa would suddenly turn up and distribute the presents. And it was magical. And I also do remember the threat of Santa withholding presents was certainly one of the best behavior controlling devices that my mum had available to her. Although, to be fair, I think it only, we didn't have the longest attention spans. And I think it really only worked Christmas Eve or possibly the day before if she was being really lucky. But no, Santa was a huge part of Christmas and really was what was the focal point of what Christmas was for me, because we didn't do Jesus or Christianity at all. Santa's very special. And that makes it kind of sad that so much of the kind of pop culture around Santa I would describe as kind of, you know, meh. No Santa movies are kind of among my favorite Christmas movies. I think Santa probably deserves better than what we've had. But yeah, that's my history with Santa.
Well, first of all, Al, you're wrong. Miracle on 34th Street, 68th Street, Northeast Oklahoma City, and Kelly Street, whatever that movie's called. That movie is delightful. It is delightful. The black and white one and the color. Okay, we'll get into this later. I have a long history with Santa. I'm going to cut across the field because I could talk a long time about this. So we were very religious. My mother, to this day, hardcore Jesus fan of that dude, right? If he was to score a touchdown, she'd celebrate. If he was to do a dirty block, she'd celebrate. She loves that dude. So she loves Jesus. Doesn't love Santa a lot. Now, my father is where this gets interesting. So my father, in and out of my life, but my father was a hardcore, like, black nationalist, Black Panther guy. And so he was really adamant on saying, no white man is bringing you presents. So that is not what we're doing. That is not what we do. We do not talk about a white man breaking into our house on Christmas Eve doing anything. So in response to that, my mom got deep into black Santas. So to this day, you go to my house, there are a number of black Santa figurines all over the house, all over the house. Black angels and stuff too, but a lot of black Santa. She got deep into that. So I never believed in it. My parents were pretty adamant about Jesus being the reason for the season. And so they weren't big on, you know, Santa and all that kind of stuff. But my dad was like hardcore. There is no Santa. Santa does not exist. There is no benevolent white man bringing you presents. Anything you get in this house, God damn it, I paid for it. I worked hard to bring these presents into the house. So my relationship with Santa was very, like, not. Now, when it comes to my kids, the way I handled that is that I would give them presents and let them know I freaking paid for these presents. But I would leave, like, one thing in, like, a different wrapping paper and say, where did that come from? Who brought that? What's going on here? You know, it's to kind of keep it alive. Because, you know, I'm not a hardcore black nationalist. I'm not a Black Panther. You know, I love white people. You know, Sarah, I love Sarah. It's all good. Mark's my homeboy. You know, so I'm not a big hardcore black Al, you're cool, Al. But I'm not a big hardcore.
We should point that Al has the most Santa accurate beard.
He
at
does.
Least in
he
shape.
Does.
Mine is whiter.
He absolutely
but,
does.
Okay.
So my relationship with Santa is kind of fraught. The black folks' relationship with Santa is really interesting because there's like a lot of black Santas around. It's a really interesting kind of discussion to kind of you dig into that. But Santa as an idea, it's interesting. I love Santa movies. Like I recently went to go watch Red One, loved it. It wasn't good, but loved it. I love Santa movies. I don't know. I have a soft spot for Santa, even though I wasn't raised with them. So it's complicated. It's complicated. I think that Sarah honestly has the best kind of thing because she gets to celebrate everything. And I love that. That's wonderful.
I do like celebrating everything. Totally on board.
Even though you don't invite me over, I would love to celebrate some stuff with you, but it's fine.
You guys are all welcome to come over for our Christmaka.
I don't want no pity invite. I'm not coming over now. Forget it. No,
it's not. More the merrier, right?
So since I brought it up, I'm hoping we can get a few points out and move on from the Santa versus religion.
Sure. I do not want to get into that. I definitely don't want to get into that.
I'm not talking about the war on Christmas kind of stuff. I'm talking about just, is this training for religion? I recall reading Peanuts comics where like the Great Pumpkin, Linus believes in the Great Pumpkin and he mocks Charlie Brown for believing in Santa Claus. And Charlie Brown says, oh, I guess we have denominational differences. And of course, this was the first I'd heard that word. Charles Schulz is a very religious guy. Was presenting this with a very keen awareness and that whole thing of the Great Pumpkin and having faith in this thing that, you know, it's like being a end of the world kind of guy that the end of the world is coming next Tuesday. Oh, well, it passed. Well, it's coming next week, definitely. And this kind of thing. And so many of these movies, like the Polar Express, really lean into faith that it's, oh, grownups just don't believe anymore. Mm-hmm. It's not that they've grown up. Like, you might have heard, because, you know, there's no way you could hide from children now. There's no way your parents, unless you're, you know, in a enclosed Amish community or something, you know, can shield you from the internet or from other kids saying there's no Santa Claus. So how do we then have a message that says, well, I know some people tell you there's no Santa Claus, but you have to believe. And it's really, and as if Santa's going to die. He's like Tinkerbell, right? If you don't believe in him, you know, there's going to be no more Christmas. The Clausometer will run out of steam and crash the sleigh. This seems very weird to me.
Did you just think of that on the top of your head, Clausometer?
No, I think it's from Elf. Or the I forget what he calls it, but there's a special rocket thing on the bottom of the sleigh that runs it.
I was about to be very impressed.
The other side is, I recall reading somewhere, like, you know, it's actually kids' belief in it is supported by evidence. Like, you put the cookies out, you do enough to deceive them so that they're actually making legitimate inferences. You're not just saying, oh, just believe this. I know it doesn't make any sense. In fact, yeah, nobody could possibly go around the world in one day, but I just want you to believe the impossible because that's what true faith is. Like, no parent pitches it like that.
No, I mean, kids are dumb. I remember...
Whoa!
I remember very distinctly being completely persuaded by the fact that the carrots that I'd left out the night before and the mince pie had been, like, half eaten. Obviously, never occurred to me that there were other people in the house who might have made that possible. I've just swallowed the line that was given to me. You know, I was still young then, like 14, 15, so it was...
Dude, that's not young, dog.
No, I know. That was a joke. It took you an embarrassingly long time to laugh. But is it training for religion? I think that's a bit of a Bill Maher-ish, joyless take on the phenomenon of Santa. The belief thing, I think, is interesting, and there's probably a weird Christian edge to the idea that you just have to believe in Santa for it to be real, right? That sounds vaguely Protestant. But Santa as a figure feels to me more like folklore than religion, like a pagan kind of thing. He's a seasonal figure. He's like a Jack Frost kind of character, right? Or he comes and brings a season with him and serves a particular function. The way Santa appears in The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe in the Chronicles of Narnia always felt to me like a very, this is what Santa really should be in a non-commercialized, non-Christianized kind of reading of Santa in our culture. It kind of makes sense if you position him like that, a wandering spirit who serves a very particular cultural function. One of my favorite things about Santa, similarly to last Christmas, we talked about the Muppets, and the same reason I love the Muppets so much is that Santa is a wonderful instance of a shared fiction that we all engage in. Maybe times are too cynical for that anymore, but my memory as a child and as a young adult was that everyone in the world shared, for the sake of children, in the fiction that Santa existed. And that was a really wonderful and magical thing, in just in exactly the same way as people share in the fiction that the Muppets are real people. And there are very few places in the world where we get to enjoy a shared delusion in safety. I like that Santa is still one of those places.
Or is it training for atheism? Because you get over, you realize that Santa is not real. And then you're like, oh, what else have I been told by my parents that seems very unlikely? Virgin birth, say?
Yeah.
Okay. But this sounds very Bill Maher-ish. But yeah, go ahead, Sarah.
Who keeps taking all those teeth from under my pillow? Is it my mom?
Well, yeah.
Exactly. I thought it was a fairy. Wait, damn it.
Sarah, stop it.
Does it erode all belief?
I don't know. So how old were all of you when you found out that Santa wasn't real?
Probably one.
Okay. You always knew, Lawrence. Yeah.
Yeah, because your dad told you. I probably six or seven. Like, there's not many years that you get of the pure indulgence of the story. Then you get a few years of pretending in a fun way still.
Yeah.
Probably only when you're like 11, 12 that you start to get enough of an ego that you feel like you're too good for it.
Yeah. What about you, Mark?
I would just be guessing. I'm guessing 5 or 6, just because I know my sister found out and she figured it out. She's 3 years older, and there's no way she would have kept it from me. There's no way she would have just been like, oh, let him believe a couple more years. She would have just sprung it right there. But the wrapping paper thing, what Lawrence described is what we do in our house and what we did all growing up, that there's the special, extra big, extra fun Santa gift, and it uses the special Santa paper. But then if next year you use the Santa paper last year for some regular presents, then your kid might figure it out, as my sister did.
That's so funny. So in our house, we had the wrapped presents were from, you know, our family members and stuff. And the unwrapped ones came on Christmas Day, and those were supposedly from Santa Claus. And when I was 6 or 7, I was snooping around, as one does, and I found all of the presents under my parents' bed.
Oh, no.
And then they ended up as Santa presents the next day.
Oh, no. And, oh, no.
I was pretty torn up about it. But anyway.
Were you really?
Yes, I was so disappointed. But I had to pretend like.
Did you cry? Did you like throw a tantrum? Did you tell people?
I didn't. Like, no, I didn't. I kept it to myself. I was like, oh, crap. I think I know what this means. And because I'm the oldest of 4, I didn't want to ruin it. But my mom could tell on Christmas Day that I knew exactly what had happened, that those were the toys that I had discovered previously. I was not surprised.
Oh, no.
And she took me aside and she was like, all right, you're onto it. And you got to keep that a secret from your siblings, because that's what a good big sister does.
I grew up as the only child. Did any of you guys like find out and was like, I got to tell the world, I got to tell my brothers and sisters that he's not real? Any of you guys do that?
I think with me, it was a slow dawning realization over a number of years. I don't think I had a eureka moment. That's probably the nicer way.
It seems like I would remember if I was the kind of asshole who would go around telling the other kids that there were a bunch of rubes. And I don't have that memory, so I'm going to hope that I didn't do that.
But there was always like that one kid at school who would say, come on, you guys, like, who are we kidding? It's not real. Like, you guys are all so dumb for believing.
And he's now a Trump voter. You know, that's what happened.
Yes.
To those kind of people.
Yeah, those kind of people. No, I don't know.
I think I did have the same notion. And I, the same thing, again, religious parallel. Occasionally, my mom would say, that wasn't a very Christian thing to do.
Mm.
And what she meant was, that wasn't a very kind thing to do. That's not the kind of thing that we learned about in church, blah, blah, blah. But what I understood is like, what? So Jewish people are not nice? What are you trying to say? And so I felt the same about, like, yeah, there were Jewish people around and they don't get Christmas presents. So what kind of bullshit is that? I don't know if that question actually came to my mind sooner than, is there actually a Santa Claus? But it seems like the kind of thing that would have added to my dubiousness of the whole enterprise.
I guess I'll say this, that thinking about it through a critical lens, it does feel weird that there is this guy who we are teaching children is watching what they do and is keeping this list of who's naughty and who's nice. And this is one thing I vehemently dislike, as I've already intimated earlier. There's like little elves sitting around watching the shit you do, and they're transmitting to Santa, if this person is naughty, is this person is nice? You know, was Mark drinking alcohol? Did Sarah Lynn have too much eggnog? You know, I don't like that. I don't like to teach kids that. That feels wrong. That feels as though it's undermining genuine morality. Like, one of the things that I love to teach my students is that there's a difference between a good person and a person who does good things because they don't want to go to jail. You know, if Sarah wanted to kill this person really, really bad, but she doesn't because she doesn't want to go to jail, Sarah's not a good person, even though we have good results.
Why are you calling me out? Jeez.
I mean, because I don't want to do that to Mark, because Mark might be that person. Sarah, I think you're a genuinely good person. But I don't think that it's wise to teach kids that. I just don't like that. Now, the idea of Santa Claus, I'm cool with. You know, the folklore, I'm cool with. But this additional added morality to it, and the way that it kind of polices people's behavior and parents use it to kind of keep their kids in line during the Christmas season, I don't know. It feels icky to me. It makes me feel uncomfortable.
I think I retained a sort of invisible witness Christian morality far longer than I retained a belief in Santa Claus, because I think, as Al and Sarah were saying, that, like, how mean is Santa Claus? Like, how judgmental? He's not going to, Krampus is not going to come instead and kill your family if you're bad. So it's really just, it's like having a very non-judgmental, a very Jesus-y, a very friendly Santa Claus that, like, oh, that was naughty. That, I mean, just the fact that it's naughty and it's not evil or something like that. The whole thing has a generally very nice tone, as opposed to, like, the much deeper teaching, thing, which we were probably getting at the same time, of like, well, the best thing that you could do is if you do something good for somebody and nobody else even knows that you did that good thing. You just helped that person and they didn't even know you helped them. They didn't thank you because you're doing it for the sake of goodness or for, you know, the witness of God. And nobody ever said Santa Claus is going to give you extra points for that kind of stuff. I felt like there's enough moralizing going on that having a little bit of Santa moralizing on top of that really doesn't change the fundamental landscape. At least that was my experience.
How is that different from Christianity? I think Christians are taught that God is kind of watching all the time and judging you, right?
Right.
So how is that not connected in some way? It's got to be connected.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. It's just redundancy.
Right.
Like, yeah. If you already have this idea. But I mean, I guess for somebody who is not raised religiously, but still has the Santa thing, does that work as a substitute? And if so, is that a good thing? Like, for me, it was redundant, but I could see, you know, maybe a way. But there is, especially with the idea of the elf. Well, then you could evade. Like, Santa's not really omniscient. He only sees what the elf sees. He needs the elf to check on things. So just do your dirty work. Whereas God can see your thoughts. Like, can Santa see your evil thoughts? I mean, I don't.
But I wonder if we're going back to what Al said about it being just kind of folklore and maybe thinking it in terms of it is a tool for Christianity. And I don't know. My parents didn't work this way. But I wonder if it is just kind of like training for kids. There's a tangible reward at the end here. If you jump through all of these hoops, there's a tangible reward, which is something that a kid can actually, because they're so literal, they actually can get that. And I wonder if it is. I like what you were saying, Al, about it being all in folklore and Muppets, and that sounds much nicer to me. But I wonder if it is more of a just a tool to get kids to buy into Christianity.
One thing we haven't talked about yet is, well, Mark, you mentioned Krampus, but how weird different cross-cultural iterations of Santa are. I don't know how many of you have heard David Sedaris's story, 6 to 8 Black Men, where he talks about Dutch Santa Claus and having Dutch Santa Claus described to him. And the story is called 6 to 8 Black Men because that's who canonically pulls Santa's sleigh in the Netherlands instead of reindeer. Oh, sorry, not that. Instead of elves, he has 6 to 8 black men with him distributing presents and beating children. And it's a terrifying vision.
You can't drop that. Wait a minute. Are you serious?
Yeah, my favorite part is that it's apparently canonically vague.
Black Peter?
Black Peter is that Santa's chief elf, right? Or is that what Black Peter is Santa? I can't remember.
I don't know the story of Black Peter. There's not been a Black Peter film.
Yeah, I know about the black face that people wear and all that kind of stuff, but I had no idea that there was this conception of Santa being a slave being pulled by 6 to 8 black people.
So I think I misspoke there. I don't think it's the slave being pulled by black people, but that instead of like elves of indeterminate ethnic origin, he has very specifically black. Has black people helping him.
So Oompa Loompas.
Yeah.
but black. Black Oompa Loompas is what they are.
Well, I think the Oompa Loompas were probably a racist thing in the first place, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, they were
people he saved from Africa or what, you know, I think that's explicit.
Yeah.
But Dutch Santa is also incredibly violent. So the children, if you misbehave, you don't just get coal in your stocking, you get put in a sack and kidnapped and beaten with sticks. But what's interesting about that is that even though that's like a wildly different cultural picture of what Santa is and does, there's still an element of rewarding and punishing children in there. That seems to be a consistent feature of the Santa story. And I wonder if that just has to do with the fact that it's a gift-giving situation. Like, you've got to come up with an excuse why maybe it is peculiarly Christian or definitely peculiarly Protestant, because you can't just have a concept of, well, it's nice to give your children presents, so just do that. You have to come up with a reason why your children deserve something. So you have to say it's because they've been good.
I have my David Sedaris Barrel Fever, and in this is the Santaland Diaries, where he works at Macy's as an elf. It's classic. Anyway, I had to read it again. He has so many, actually. He has quite a number of holiday stories, I find. But I think my favorite is when he was a Macy's elf, and it was fun to reread that.
All right, let's get to media soon, but just a little more on the history. I'll link folks to this Englishheritage.org.uk page.
That was so interesting.
Yeah, I didn't know that the Sinterklaas, you know, this European thing was actually a completely distinct tradition from Father Christmas as this guy that sort of looks like, you know, the ghost of Christmas present, but Dionysus, basically.
Yeah.
That was the British thing and that they merged at some point.
Have any of you had any experience with the St. Nicholas tradition at the beginning of December? Have any of you done any of that? We had a family friend growing up who was Austrian, and his family would do the St. Nicholas tradition at the beginning of December. They would always have a big party, and he would dress up as St. Nick and come out, and he was very adamant that he was not Santa Claus. He was St. Nicholas, and that they were different. And it was interesting going through that history that you posted, Mark, of how those two figures kind of merged once they came over from Germany and Austria and Amsterdam, like they came over to the States, and how that kind of shifted in U.S. culture anyway. Do they have anything like that, Al, where you are? Is there the St. Nicholas tradition?
No, we don't do any, like the UK is really boring as a part of Europe in that we don't have any of the little cultural additions because our culture formed the basis for yours. And we've just taken back various bits of annoying Americanization. We don't have any Saints Days festivals or anything cool like that.
Yeah. Or if there was like Anglican traditions that were, I don't know, born out of that. No.
The weirdest one is Chris Stingle. I don't know if you know. Do you know about Chris Stingle?
What's that?
It's a weird C of E, a Church of England ritual, which happens during the Christmas season. I'm casting way back into my memory. I went to church maybe 5 times as a child. But in Chris Stingle, the main thing about Chris Stingle is that you get an orange and you stick sweets to it and you put a candle in it and then you eat it. And that is somehow symbolic. But it's not very good. As far as extra bits of Christmas tradition goes, it's kind of a downer. Well, not a downer, just boring. So no, nothing very interesting.
Right. So I'm not going to go through the whole history, but it's back into like the 17th century.
Yeah.
This Father Christmas thing. Playwright Ben Jonson is highlighted as somebody. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't until the 1880s, you know, so Victorian period, where you actually get the Father Christmas merged with Santa Claus. And getting the idea of putting toys and sweets in stockings as opposed to a guy that brings an orange to the feast. That this was like a long trope of basically like a logo for Christmas. Like, it's the celebration time. Let's have a picture of a fat guy who brings an orange to the feast. Maybe it's a pagan magical being, but it was stressed, at least in this article, that it was more just an image. Mm-hmm. Like a picture of a tree or something like that.
And it was for adults too. It wasn't for kids at first.
Yeah. So the Victorians gave us the modern Christmas. Coca-Cola did not invent the image. I guess they refined a particular version that we have, but it seems like this article identified this cartoonist Thomas Nast by 1863 to 1881 was doing these pictures. And the one from 1881 looks pretty much like what you would expect. You know, it's got the full on stuff. And of course, the Night Before Christmas poem was from 1823. So like we already had most of the tradition by then. It's not Coca-Cola. It's not a commercial thing.
Is there any part of the modern Santa that Coca-Cola can be credited with inventing? Because it is such a common, like, cynical take that Santa is a Coca-Cola invention. Is there just nothing to it?
I mean, I guess it's the very specific design, like that was became popular.
Yeah, the design.
So that in at least in America, and then making it way back across the ocean.
I don't want to sound insensitive, but was he fat before Coca-Cola, before that image?
That picture from 1881 was fat, but from what I understood, he sort of was, it was not set.
That wasn't Santa though, right?
The 1881 was Santa, yes.
Was Santa, okay.
Yes.
I vaguely remember that in the Night Before Christmas poem is described as a chunky boy.
Yeah.
A lot of fat shaming happening here. Like Santa Claus has health issues. He only works out one day of the year. Like, cut the guy. One thing I will say, okay, so I just watched Red One, and their conception of Santa Claus is that he's like buff. Like, so J.K. Simmons plays Santa Claus, and it shows him lifting weights and being buff. It's a wonderful kind of twist on that. But like, guys, leave Santa alone, man. Like, come on. He's doing the best he can. Like, it's a lot of cookies.
I was really wondering.
He's immortal, right? So it doesn't matter. He's not going to get diabetes.
So you might as well. If you're going to be immortal, you might as well just eat the cookies.
In the Night Before Christmas poem, he's described as, quote, he was chubby and plump. So, yeah.
Okay.
Canonically chunky.
A 300-pounder.
You guys are so terrible. You're all terrible. I'm trying to take this seriously, and you guys are turning it into fat shaming, and it's not okay, guys. It's not okay.
He shoved in his mouth yet another flounder. I don't know. Well, yeah, let's get to the media there. So this is a character that is so one-dimensional, right? It's intriguing to kids because they want to know how the science works. It's more how the reindeers fly, not like, does he have health problems associated with his obesity? That's not generally the thing. But it's such a thin premise on which to launch. I think kids love world building.
Oh, they do. Yeah. They do.
And we just did L. Frank Baum. He wrote a whole Life and Adventures of Santa Claus book, which has been made into a film where he is like a fairy. So trying to get through these British traditions. And there's other sort of origin stories, multiple origin stories that we've done. I don't know. Do we even want that? Or would you rather have him as a one-dimensional, basically what Al was saying. He's a logo. He's a spirit. You don't ask, what were you when you were alive, spirit? You know, it's like, that's not the point. He's a nature spirit or something.
No, the best, the Santa Claus is Coming to Town, the TV special.
Rankin and Bass?
Yes. That's the best. That's the best one, in my opinion. I love an origin story. And that was...
Dad Burgermeister.
I hated.
I loved it.
I hated that one. I do not like that one. I am interested by the... So when I was a kid, when I was younger, this is going way back into my memory. There was a movie called Prancer. It came out in like 1988, 89 or something like that. That movie was one of my favorite movies for like maybe 10 years. Well, my favorite Christmas movie, I should say, until I found Hallmark movies, which are now my favorites. But it's like taking seriously the idea of Santa Claus, and it's taking seriously the idea of all the stuff around Santa Claus, because there's not only Santa Claus, there's also Rudolph, there's also all the different reindeer, there are the elves. Like, I think it's rich territory to mine stories. It really is. It's an interesting thing to dig into because there are a lot of stories that could be told. Now, some of the stories are terrible, but something like The Santa Claus, I found that to be a delightful movie, the first one. Elf, very interesting. I think that there are interesting stories to tell. Now, Santa Claus himself, he's a one-dimensional character. He's jolly. He has a list and he checks it twice and he, you know, naughty and nice and all that kind of stuff. But ultimately, I think all the stuff around Santa is really interesting to mine. I think there's a lot of things there that you can kind of dig into. And they've been trying for hundreds of years to kind of mine that territory and tell these kind of Christmas stories. I think it's very interesting.
We've had episodes on Christmas films before, and almost none of these ones considered that I was looking into, like, with depictions of Santa Claus, really came up. I mean, of course, Elf and things, but, like, and Ed Asner is a nice, grumpy Santa Claus, but Santa Claus is always, like, the side character, the straight character, the deus ex Klaus that comes in and saves Frosty or whatever. I almost think he should be a little stop-motion animation. Like, that is actually the one that I have the most associations with, all those Rankin Bass specials.
Well, what about Miracle on 34th Street, like as a story about Santa?
One of my favorite. I love it. But is it really a story about Santa, or is it a story about our relationship with Santa? That is what's always been interesting to me about that film. But it's a lovely film. I love it.
I think it supports the point you were making just now, Lawrence, about how like Santa himself is too thin a character to really carry a good story, but the consequences of Santa or the Santa myth existing and the kind of world building that you can put along with that do provide really good fertile ground. And I think that's what Miracle on 34th Street does, because it's all about the kind of faith that you're supposed to have in Santa and what kind of place that has in the world. So, I mean, the question of whether this is really a story about Santa or not, that's really the main question of the film. What are our general metaphysical positions on Miracle on 34th Street? Do we think that it's a film about Santa, or do we think it's a film about a guy who thinks he's Santa?
I think you're supposed to think throughout that it's absolutely about the real Santa, even though it makes no sense from that perspective, because like, what are you doing just hanging around at the, like every other, like what is Santa's life like? He's working hard up there. He's not going to just live in somebody's apartment as a house guest.
He's not going to a parade. Come on, not on Thanksgiving. Good God, he's busy.
And he's just like, oh, I can't get together with you on Christmas Eve because, you know, it's Christmas Eve. I got my thing to do. But other than that, he's fine. But, if he's magic.
He's free.
But he never makes anybody, he never like, ooh, he makes an actual miracle. He should make it start snowing inside the courthouse. Surprise.
Right.
Mark, you're so cynical about Santa, man.
I'm cynical about films. You know, I got to say, I avoided this film. I'm sure I saw some version of it long ago, but like it was not one of my favorites. And I just, this season, because we were doing this, made a point of watching the 1947 one. And it was such a good movie.
Yes, it is. It is a really good movie.
Objectively.
Yeah, it is. It's very well made, very well acted.
Objectively, it's a good movie. You know what? And I was surprised at how great Natalie Wood was. As a kid actor?
Yes. Oh, yes.
I'd forgotten that.
She wasn't like not that there's anything wrong with Shirley Temple, but she wasn't like, oh, cute. You know, she really came across as like a real kid. You know what? I actually have a little bone to pick with the 1947 version of Miracle on 34th Street, because I had not seen it. I had avoided this movie. And I think it objectively is a good movie, but the messaging, you've got Maureen O'Hara, who is this single mom, career woman, living in the city, raising her child to be, you know, have her own opinions, being able to call things as she sees it. And I did not like the message of that being a terrible way to live, to raise your kid as a city kid who is knowledgeable and has agency. And it feels like it's going backwards to say, no, you just have to believe in a non-existent thing in the sky instead of being, you know, your own person. I really did not like that at all.
Yeah. I mean, it's not as blatant as Polar Express, but it does have this believe thing, which is just, you know, for all the reasons that we've been talking about, are very strange to me.
Can there be such a thing as a progressive/revolutionary Santa Claus? I mean, he's redistributive in his kind of modus operandi, but also it's something rooted in quasi-religious tradition. It's maybe not surprising if Santa stories end up pushing kind of vaguely conservative values.
That's what it was. It just felt like it started in this progressive place and then it just went backwards from there. And I was not necessarily that surprised that was the messaging in a film made in 1947, but the 1994 version was also the same thing. Mm-hmm. You know, it was the same exact message.
It doubles down in 1984. Yeah. However, I will say the spirit of that film, it is all over Hallmark films. Like, it's all over. Mm. Like the city person who's progressive and thinks on her own and all that kind of stuff, she goes to the small town and realizes, my life in the city isn't that great. I need to have this love interest in this small town. I'm going to leave the city. Like, honestly, I'm fascinated by how deep those ideas that you find in that film are kind of now in Hallmark films. It's really interesting to me. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not going to assume you guys watch Hallmark movies as much as I watch Hallmark movies, but I watch probably 1 to 2 Hallmark movies a week during the Christmas season because I love those movies. And in years past, I would watch one a day. I'm big into the Hallmark Christmas kind of thing.
I think you picked out next year's topic. Okay.
But, but 75% of those films, no, we won't. Those are delightful movies, Al. God damn it. Anyway, but 75% of those films have Santa in it. In some periphery kind of way, Santa will come in and like wink at the couple and be like, yeah, I'm the one who brought y'all together. Like, seriously, it is a fascinating thing what's going on in Hallmark. It's fascinating and delightful. I love it.
It's also fascinating that we continue to buy into that myth. You know, I write like book club or women's fiction, and adjacent to that are those types of holiday stories that are kind of rom-com-y, romantic, you know, kind of stories. And they are so popular. In fact, they've never been more popular than they are today. And
really,
you would think that with that kind of conservative messaging that we would have long ago gotten past it, but nope. We love it.
I'm surprised to hear you say, Lawrence, that Santa appears in these things, because I was thinking that the whole drift of films is away from the mythologies, away from any inclusion of Santa, that is just about the Christmas spirit. And so even the character of Santa Claus as representing kindness. So the 1947 version, The one thing I was a little surprised is he's kind of a scold. He's kind of a prude. Like, he's definitely judgmental.
Yeah, he kind of is. Yeah, he really is.
Yeah.
He really is.
I don't know if that's...
You're drunk. Well,
yeah. You know, that he hits somebody over the head. Like, that's the whole reason that he is institutionalized and the main conflict comes up is because he doesn't have quite a turn the other cheek thing. Mm-hmm. But I guess this is just asking, like, well, what is... kindness? Is it a straight up, I'm such an immortal Jesus sort of being that I don't have to react with rage? Or, so I just watched, I think on your recommendation from last year, Lawrence, Violent Night with David Harbour as the actual Santa Claus, bringing amazement to all that see him with his magical powers. But it's explicitly a diehard, except that it's Santa Claus doing
it's Santa Claus
kicking.
Who's doing it, yeah. Wasn't it delightful? Wasn't it lovely? I loved it.
Sure.
It's not like a traditional Santa Claus movie, but, Santa Claus kicking ass is wonderful. But I don't know, man. Like, I think that I like to think of kindness. Oh, gosh, I don't want to go too deep into this. But if you are overly kind, you can set people up for failure. Like, kindness is also saying what you're doing is not okay. You got to do better. That is a form of kindness. And so I like to think of kindness in that kind of vein. And so I'm perfectly comfortable with a little bit of a grumpy Santa who's saying, stop doing that. Don't do that. Do better. Because that is kindness to me in a way. So I'm good with that. I like that.
The messaging must come differently when it's wrapped up in this big ball of red and white.
I think Santa is perfectly fine in his body. I continue to say that you guys need to stop fat shaming that guy.
I am not fat shaming him. I'm just an objective fact.
He is going to be on a diet in January because of what you guys are saying. And then
he's not. He shouldn't.
Next Christmas, he's going to be skinny. You're not going to like it.
Never say diet. No.
I didn't quite get through the whole thing, but I did watch this year some of Fred Claus from 2007 with Paul Giamatti. Vince Vaughn is his naughty brother.
I vaguely remember that.
And
movie.
So it's just a Vince Vaughn acting like Vince Vaughn flick, but it's a Paul Giamatti plays the Santa Claus and he, kind of gets a little Paul Giamatti-ish, a little yelly and nervous. And that's a thing that they talk about his weight, but he's immortal and he makes his whole family immortal. It would be very cruel to have him outgrow.
It would be
everyone that I'm going to get another Mrs. Claus. They just all die. There's such little, if you were really a spirit. So it raises interesting metaphysical questions, but I don't think it was a good movie overall, but I didn't get to the last third of it.
Are you guys comfortable with black Santas? Do you like that idea or do you think Santa should remain white? Like, because this whole move to kind of make Santa inclusive. So there's like Asian Santas and there's black Santas and there's South Asian.
Well, in Noel, that film.
Yeah.
Whenever you have a Santa Claus sort of Santa is a role that gets passed from person to person, then why wouldn't you have it go to a woman in the case of that Noel movie?
Anna Kendrick
or
movie,
a black guy or whatever. And unfortunately, the film Black Santa, there is a film, but it's like some.
That sounds like a horror movie.
Blaxploitation horror.
Yeah, that sounds like a horror
shoot
movie.
Shoot him up. It does not seem anything you'd want to actually watch.
I wouldn't understand why people would have a problem with it because it's a mythical figure. You can imagine it any way that you want. In fact, you should. That's the beauty of myth and literature.
So in most cases, like I'm generally skeptical of like straight racial recasting of established characters in a canon, but usually because that turns out to be kind of a lazy way of trying to do representation. My thing is, if you want to tell a black story, then come up with a good black story. If you're just recasting a white story, you're probably not telling a good black story. But in a case like Santa, there's no equivalent other story to tell, like recast away. And as Sarah says, it's mythical. I don't think it matters. Precisely because it's myth and because it's supposedly cross-cultural myth, then it just makes sense to make the figure work with whatever culture you're telling the story in.
You know, I remember when Megyn Kelly, and I just sent a link to you guys about that. I remember when Megyn Kelly went on this rant about how Santa is white. He's just white. She was so incensed that there were black representations of Santa and she could not come to terms with it. And then, of course, she went and said Jesus was white, which is...
This is just So stupid.
But the thing is, like, I'm telling you, there is a real big push back against diversifying Santa. Like, Santa for many people just needs to be a white person.
I don't understand why that's a hill someone is so willing to die on. It's just, it seems so stupid.
Right. I guess if you see it as a character that has solidified, then like, why would you change anything? You don't want a thin Santa either. You don't want a Santa with red hair or whatever. Like, I was sort of talking this through with my wife of like, what if the image of, cause I like the idea. I would rather see Jesus drawn as black just because I like to kick that high horse down and people that think the brown Jesus, you know, the brown painting of Jesus, mm-hmm. that one that's everywhere with him looking at the sky. I don't, you know, it's a mythical figure. So like he should look how at least Mediterranean.
Right.
And so I have no objection to that.
Yeah. I was going to say, I would imagine that you, Mark, would just care about the historical accuracy and you would want a picture of Jesus to look like. So given that maybe Santa Claus should look like, where was St. Nicholas? St. Nicholas was from Greece, so he should also look Mediterranean.
but you know, he's been up at the North Pole a long time, so you maybe you fade. Fair,
yeah.
He's in some skin conditions. I just sent you a link.
Yeah.
Yeah, Dashing Through the Snow. I remember that movie.
Yes, there's this movie from 2023 that it sounds like a Miracle on 34th Street of like some guy just shows up claiming to be Santa Claus, yeah. and then he eventually shows some magic probably. And like, and that's totally real, you know, that if it's just, oh, this is a thing people talk about, but he could be anywhere. He could be anyone. Then like, of course, why not a black Santa? Like this film doesn't sound any more outlandish than any of the other versions of that. I was sort of talking through like, well, what if the vision of Santa had always been black?
Hmm.
And I bet we would actually have canceled Santa by now because it would like, oh, you think a black guy is this smiling Aunt Jemima goofus who's like, oh, just jolly and get in your face. And people be like, that is an offensive stereotype of black people. Let's not have Santa. So I don't mind Santa becoming black for black kids now, but if Santa had always been black, I don't know. What is that? That's even a harebrained sociological theory.
Yeah, I don't necessarily agree. I mean, it depends on how Santa is depicted. Like, if he's depicted like Aunt Jemima is, that would have been terrible. Or, you know, any of these. But if Santa is depicted as just like a nice guy who's a little plump, I hate Santa, a nice guy who is full-figured and brings presents.
And very wise.
And very wise. It'd have been fine. It'd been very fine. I don't think he would have been canceled.
Because we've already established that Santa is a pretty two-dimensional character. Mm-hmm. Is that problematic when you tack it on to other races and cultures and genders? Do you know what I mean?
I don't think so.
I mean, if you think Santa is a functional role, uh-huh. then like anybody could fulfill that role,
yeah.
or anybody could always have been fulfilling that role.
Right.
What would be good is like have a Santa that's depicted as black in a movie and like, well, why did we have this version of a white Santa? Well, because of course the white kids and their parents in the 1930s and whatever, like would not have accepted how Santa actually looks. So like if this mm-hmm. actually became a theme of a movie, I would enjoy that. I think that's Hollywood. You're welcome to that.
I think you missed your calling as a screenwriter, Mark. That's a very good idea.
You could send it to the blacklist.
Interesting. It's called the blacklist, Sarah. I'm sorry. Okay, we need to stop. I'm being crazy. All right.
They're mostly just pretty forgettable depictions in film. There's this Kurt Russell version from a couple years ago.
Oh, my God.
That I thought was just pretty terrible.
It was fine, guys.
It was fine as a kid's movie, but like that he's singing rock and roll songs in jail.
Okay, let me go on my tangent.
Go, please.
Because people love to criticize. Home Alone, for example. Let's go back to Home Alone. That movie is a wonderful Christmas movie. It is not a good movie, though. It is just not. It makes no sense that these thieves would walk into this building and be so bumbling that all this would happen. I'm sorry.
Lawrence,
I'm sorry. It is not.
It's a comedy,
it is not a good, but it's not a good movie. It is not.
And I'll point out, Violent Night also has a section that makes just really nice, you know, because you're like, wouldn't those guys have gotten more hurt in Home Alone? Okay, well, let's see a movie where that actually happens.
It actually happens.
I can't believe the last thing that you want to do on this podcast is disrespect John Hughes and just think you're going to get away
with
it.
Let me finish. What I'm saying is that we need to understand that when it comes to Christmas movies, we judge them on a different level of quality.
Sure.
Yeah.
We're comfortable with some movies being over the top, silly, sentimental. And we accept that when it comes to Christmas movies. But if it was Gladiator, we would not accept it. If it was something else, we would not accept it. So all I'm saying, and I'm going to try to back out of the hornet's nest I just bumped into with Al here. What I'm trying to say is that we just need to understand that Christmas movies are just different and accept them. That's the reason why I'm able to watch these Hallmark Christmas movies and also these terrible Netflix Christmas movies and have a good time and just drink my, I don't drink eggnog anymore, but drink my brown liquor and eat my peppermint stick and have a wonderful time because I just let it go. I let it go. I don't bring my critical brain to those kinds of films because that's not what they're trying to do. And so that's what we do. And I'm sorry, Home Alone 1. Okay, fine, it's comedy. Home Alone 2, the second time they leave this kid at home and they travel across the world and he, these same guys, come on. Like, these movies are objectively not good, but we accept them because it's Christmas.
Well, the Home Alone TV series, Child Protective Services.
That wasn't good subtitle. Either. That wasn't good either. I mean, like The Preacher's Wife. That was pretty good, but it wasn't a great, like a lot of these Christmas movies, even the really good ones, they're kind of hokey and sentimental and not very well made sometimes. But we go with it.
I just think you're wrong. I mean, you're definitely right that there are a lot of bad Christmas movies, and there are a lot more bad Christmas movies than there are good Christmas movies. And you're right also that the reason that Christmas movies can get away with being bad is because during the holiday season, you just need something to watch, and like, it might as well be a piece of crap. And so a lot of them get away with it. But also, a lot of Christmas movies are some of the best movies ever made. And I'm not just talking
like
about...
Which ones?
I'm not just talking about Die Hard, but...
A Wonderful Life, no, sir. Don't get me started on A Wonderful Life, dog.
Well, It's a Wonderful Life was going to be one of the ones that I mentioned. But Home Alone 2 is... Like, it's dumb not because it's a Christmas movie, but because it's a family movie, because it's a family blockbuster comedy movie. It doesn't lean on being Christmas to prop up shoddy filmmaking. It's a great film and a great Christmas film. And you...
It's well made.
You
well made.
Have just got your Scrooge knickers in a twist.
I do not!
So I agree. I think that I do bring my critical brain to it, which is why I found Fred Claus maybe not so easy to get through, and I don't really want to see Noel ever again, even though that's probably going to be something that plays in my house. And I think that Elf, even though maybe when it came out people were like, oh, it's kind of cashing in, I think that really holds up, that the comedy stylings of Will Ferrell are just gonna, that's just one of his best performances ever and so well written.
I agree.
I wonder, like, because I was sort of distinguishing between movies and TV shows that were about Santa as like a real thing versus people who were, you know, dressing up like Santa because they worked at a mall or whatever, you know, and
bad Santa.
Bad Santa. And I find that the movies that are actually about, like, where you're supposed to believe that Santa is real are far less critically successful than some of the other Christmas movies that are still talking about a lot of the same stuff. And they feature Santas that aren't actually real, or they're faded into the background. Like, Elf is so great. Elf is so good, but it's not about Santa. It's about Will Ferrell's character.
It's a really good one.
And I was surprised how similar that sort of is to Miracle on 34th Street, that like the fish out of water comes to town and he works at a mall
That's true.
It makes me wonder if maybe they were like inspired by Miracle on 34th Street, because there's some kind of relationship. Now, It's a Wonderful Life. Very well made.
It's off topic. It's not about Santa.
Very well directed.
Yeah, not maybe we should save that for the after talk. So
Come on. You guys don't. Okay, fine.
If you have two sentences to say about it, please go ahead. Because that touches on many of the same sort of supernatural, judgy, peace center, you know, a lot of the same stuff that we've been talking about throughout this discussion. So go ahead.
It does, but I will save my thoughts for the people who pay for them.
All right. I'm maybe a Pretty Much Pop member subscription is the perfect thing for your loved one.
Absolutely. Bring them on.
Patreon.com/PrettyMuchPop. I guess just to wrap up here, any final... Yeah, I don't want to end by crapping on some films, but like, I think I will add that maybe I'll have some words about The Santa Claus, which I watched for the first time in a long time. I just loathe Tim Allen. That's really what it comes down to. That's spoiler for my review of that film. But we can talk a little more in detail.
It's a shame to love Tim Allen? Is that what you're saying?
No, it was a shame because I have fond memories of watching that film as a kid. And I'm not surprised that it hasn't held up, but I'm sorry.
Yep. All right. Well, happy holidays, everybody.
Yeah, happy
Assuming
holidays.
This got out in time.
Merry Christmas.
Happy Christmas.
And guys, Santa is real. He's real in your heart.
See Partially Examined Life's Feuerbach episode, where the thing we worship is the best quality of us externalized through an ontological mistake. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
A lot of big words that nobody understood. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Pretty Much Pop is part of the Partially Examined Life podcast network. Get more Pretty Much Pop at prettymuchpop.com. Get bonus content for every episode at patreon.com/prettymuchpop.